So I'm Rachel, I'm the CEO of Humane Research Australia, and today I'm very pleased to welcome with us Dr. Hugh Morandini. And I'll allow Hugh to introduce himself shortly as one of our HRA members and a researcher. So good morning.
Hi, Rachel.
Thank you very much for joining us today. I'd like to start off by asking a little bit about your background. Can you let me know what led you to a career in science?
Yes, sure. So actually, it's been a long journey. I started with a medical school in France. So I did that for 2 years, and then at the end, I had to change pathway. So I decided to go into psychology. So I completed a Bachelor of Psychology because I was very interested in human behaviors and biology of the brain.
Yes.
And then when I completed my Bachelor of Psychology, I came to Australia, and then I decided to change again and to do more, to study more neuroscience, because I realized that actually my passion and my interest was in neurons and, biology, pure biology of the brain. So I did a Bachelor of Neuroscience, then an honors in neuroscience, and finally a PhD in clinical neuroscience. Yes.
Brilliant. So a lot of study.
Yes, it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And can you tell me a little bit more about your recent PhD that you mentioned?
Yes. So actually, my PhD, as I said, was in clinical neuroscience. So I used neuroimaging data from MRI, or functional MRI, actually, those scan where you can see the activity of the brain.
Yes, yep.
Coming up, so I used that sort of data. Then I investigated how this brain network develops in children and adolescents.
Yeah.
And what are the lifestyle factors, such as, for instance, nutrition, how this could impact the development of this network. And finally, I also investigated the development of this network in children with ADHD. So that was the whole project. Yes.
Yes. So the MRI scans are of those particular patients?
Yes.
Yep.
So yes, I used data that was available online, so in the data bank, which is located in New York and which is freely available online, yeah, for researchers.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes.
Thank you. And so your current field of research following on from that PhD is, as you mentioned, clinical neuroscience. So in your role now, what would an average day involve, if there is such a thing?
Yes, so actually, as I say, it varies a lot, depending on, what you need to do, obviously. But I would say that in general, what I'm doing is, there is a collect of data. So you do data entry, data analysis at your office on the computer using statistical software. But then you also have to, write papers. Also, you can do, you can apply for grants.
Yep.
Always good.
Yep.
to get some funding.
It's crucial. Yep.
Yes. And then you also have, sometimes I have meetings with other researchers in my institutions or other team members, for instance, clinicians. Yes. So this is usually what you do. In clinical research. Yeah, I think that's
quite varied. Yeah. And are you involved personally in the gathering of the data, that side as well?
Yes, so I set up the questionnaires, define which questionnaires and which assessments we should or we could do, and then the clinicians are actually giving those questionnaires to the patients, and then I collect the data a little bit later once all the assessments are done.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. And as an HRA member, it's clear that you are supportive of alternatives to the use of animals in research. I think it's quite clear from what you've said, but if you could elaborate on if you use such alternatives in your research.
Yes, so first of all, I'm doing clinical research. So obviously I'm working on data which are collected from patients, of human patients. So already this is an alternative first
Yes.
off. And then secondly, I'm also currently in my position, I'm also using neuroimaging data. So again, I told you before that during my PhD, I used a neuroimaging data from a data bank. So I keep using the data from this huge data bank to do further research on different topics. So I have to use specific software, specific neuroimaging software to be able to analyze those specific sets of data. But this also is actually an alternative to the use of animals. And yeah, I feel lucky to be able to, look at data coming from human subjects and to look at the brain activity of humans. So yeah.
And the I guess data bank that you mentioned, is there several different ones of those globally? Are they increasing the amount of data they have them in, or are they
Yes, so
quite
this is a
fixed?
yes, so this is an ongoing project. I think they are aiming for 10,000 children and adolescents. So this is a pretty huge study. And it's been going on for 5 years now. So I think they are almost midway. I think they have around now between 3 4,000 children. So I think they still have 5 or 6 years to go. But yeah, so this is still ongoing. And as I said, the data is huge. They have a lot of clinical data, a lot of biological samples as well. So yeah, to be able to access that type of data is very important in the clinical research, indeed.
Brilliant. And has there been any challenges or resistance based on your decision to not use animals? I guess I'm referring to throughout your career and study in science.
Yes. Not really, but I just remember that once it was a neuroscience unit, it was a neurobiology one, and there was a practical work where we had to actually do some work on rats. And I remember at the beginning of the unit that I contacted the professor or the admin of the unit. And I asked straight away, would it be possible to instead of doing the lab work to write a thesis or write, to do an alternative? Is there any alternative to complete this unit? And I remember very clearly the reply from this guy, who told me that if I don't want to do research on animals, then maybe I should reconsider my choice of neuroscience. So obviously I was not very happy to hear that, after being at university for a little while, I knew that you could do many other things. So yes, I think that was something that was a little bit complicated. So I had to attend this lab, and indeed it was not, how can I say, not very useful, even in terms of what they were trying to do. They were trying to replicate a model of Parkinson in rats, and I was very not impressed by the model of Parkinson's, because it's very subjective, the interpretation of behaviors in rats and what they think is actually reproducing human behaviors is as I say, is up to the person who is
Sure.
doing the work, you know. So yes, that was the only time I think where, you know, someone told me that, oh, it's not possible to do something else.
Oh well, that's I guess it's sad that you had that incident, but I thought it would be more commonplace than that, so I guess that's good in that sense.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm however, I heard 2 years after, because I was in touch with a neuroscience student who did the unit 2 years after me, and he told me that actually the units they stopped doing this type of lab work because actually there was ethical concern.
Good. Yeah, that's good then. Yeah.
So yes, I don't know what happened, but I mean, I'm not surprised, but
Maybe that particular lecturer left. That could be
maybe, or maybe
related.
some people complain about the way it was conducted, because yeah, it was not so great. So yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear that changed in that instance.
Yes.
And I guess in terms of HRA, we often hear in the field of neuroscience a justification put forward that they need to use an entire functional biological being, and this means animal models because it is not ethical to do so with humans, and alternative responses lack the integrity of a whole intact biological system. We read this often as a defense. How would you respond to that particular claim?
Look, I think that to be able to, you know, to reproduce an exact to reproduce a human characteristic in an animal models, you would need to be able to have the exact same biological and anatomical parameters or features. And obviously, that is not the case. You know, we have like a lot of different anatomical and biological characteristics between animals and humans. For instance, in rats and mouse, we now know that the brain is very different. So, you know, some researchers could argue that that is not the case, but still, like 3 years ago, there is a new type of neuron that was discovered in the human brain and that has never been found in rats. So we are always, you know, discovering new biological processes which are different in humans compared to animals. So, and by the time, you know, we've been investigating different disease processes in rats, you know, we've been doing that for 100 years also, I mean, in modern science, and still we haven't done a lot of progress. For instance, I could come back to the Parkinson's disease. We know that the drugs that we are using to treat the Parkinson's symptoms haven't changed much over the past 70 years. So, you know, we're still using the L-DOPA molecule. So although we have done a lot of animal experimentation, and probably, you know, killed millions of rats in Parkinson's models, the progress has been very pushing and minimal. So that's why I think that's not a very good argument, because if that was a good argument, then the progress would be much quicker.
There would be
There
a
would
result.
be it would mean that in fact animal models are great, because they are very similar, and because as they said, or what the argument would be, that, you know, there is an integrity and a whole biological systems in animals, but still it doesn't really justify the success of a scientific discovery in those in the animals. So yes.
Thank you. And my next question is quite similar. It's, I guess, from a personal perspective, I've I've seen quite a few studies recently about using animal models to study autism. And
Yes.
I went to a lecture recently and I heard someone explaining their research. And to me, it really seemed, I guess, as a layperson, that the symptoms that they had created in this mouse were really not representative of what would be in a human who had autism. But it was, I guess, described as an animal model. How accurate do you believe animal models of conditions such as autism are in representing the human condition, and what limitations do they have?
So again, well, coming back to the biological differences, right? The difference in cytoarchitecture, the difference in ratio of different neurotransmitter and, brain molecules. I mean, just to try to be a bit less specific. And those conditions or human diseases are very complex. They have a lot of, there is a lot of, for instance, cognitive symptoms, which are very, very complicated to assess in animal models. We have also like behavioral symptoms, which again are very, very difficult to assess because humans are very social being, which is not the case with all animal models. I guess I'm coming back again to the, to the Parkinson model. It's the same. They are all a little bit the same. All the models, autism models, Parkinson models. It's the fact that it's very subjective. As I was telling you before, the Parkinson model, the fact that the rat is turning on himself or itself. I don't know how you want to call it. This is supposed to reflect, the problems in Parkinson's, in movements, movement symptoms. It's Parkinson people, people with this disease are not spinning on themselves, So this is not. It's not very accurate, but also the main difference I would say, and the, why it's very difficult to investigate those diseases in animals is because those animals lack the ability to speak.
Of course,
And the main clinical diagnosis, the main clinical investigation, most of the time, are when we are talking to the patients. I wouldn't be able, we wouldn't be able to do some research in patients in my service if they couldn't speak, because we wouldn't be able to give them the instructions. We wouldn't be able to recall the answers. So this is something which is very important because also it gives us the feeling of those people. How do they feel? But it also gives us the ability to assess their mental health problems as well. If they have any comorbidities, things that you cannot do in animals model. So it's this is the main limitation, I think, is the fact that we cannot investigate their inner feelings and their subjective,
I guess based on that, I'm just thinking in terms of non-verbal autism, there would also be a lack of being able to understand necessarily what they're feeling or those kind of things. But maybe there's other ways of gathering that information that's still not interpreting whether a mouse moves in a certain way or reacts to its offspring in a certain way that would still be more accurate.
Absolutely. So, yes, it's a set of biological and behavioral differences which are very significant, actually. And that's why those animal models cannot be considered as ideal, actually.
Thank you. And do you have any tips for listeners who may be considering entering or already in the research profession but wish to progress their career without the use of animals?
So, for instance, for the students, I would strongly advise them to, if they have a unit where they have to use animal models, would be first to contact the person who is in charge of the lab or in charge of the modules, and ask them, is there an alternative to complete the units? I think it's always people shouldn't be afraid or shy to ask, because most of the time there would be an alternative. And also to, if they want to do, for instance, if some students want to do a honors or a PhD, are looking for a project, I would advise them to take 5 minutes to think first, because it seems a little bit strange, but you would be surprised by the number of people who just wants to do a PhD, but they're taking the first project that they see pretty much just to because the professors have some research project and they had advertise them, and the students are, they're not complaining much and they're just taking what is there. But they could actually try to, for instance, I'm taking my experience, I actually contacted a lot of clinicians. I sent like dozens and dozens of emails around, up to the point where I was able to actually be in touch with a clinician at university who was interested in doing research, clinical research, in children. And my honors was actually a clinical project, because my supervisor back then, the clinician was actually wanted to run a clinical project. And so I was lucky to find a project that was done in humans, and this would not have happened if I simply waited at university, and if I was just restricting my research or my interest in the topic that was proposed in the lab. So
So
yeah,
be more
I would,
proactive and finding
yes,
something.
exactly. This is what I was about to say. Just be proactive. Don't be shy to contact people, even if they don't reply, it's fine. Just send an email to people at the hospital, to people at the university, and see. But I'm sure that there are more clinical projects out there than we think. So
So you
yeah.
really kind of created the project scope
Yes.
yourself with this, with them.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
That sounds
So yeah.
good. Yes, because I guess as part of my role is I often look at some of the PhD projects that are advertised, and I see a lot of them involving animals, and
Yeah.
again with autism models and Parkinson's models and other conditions, and it shocks me a little bit because sometimes they're just described as, are you excited about working with mice? Which I find a
Yeah.
strange advertisement for the PhD as well, because it should
Yeah.
be you're excited about what you're going to find,
Yes, I mean, as I
not
said, like,
maybe excited about using an old method.
yeah, no, yeah, but yeah, I think it's worth to take like 5 minutes in your time and to really question or to really ask yourself, what do you want to do? I think that's the most important, rather than just rushing into, the project and take whatever you see. So
Yeah, that's good advice. Thank you. And a big question for you here. In your opinion, what can HRA or other like-minded organisations do to best achieve a transition to non-animal methods in research in Australia? We realise that it's going to be some time off, but any
Yes.
advice from, I guess, your insider perspective on how that could be achieved?
Yes. So I think a good way would be to actually educate the people, educate the students, because for instance, as a student at university, we are never we are never told what are or what is the success rates in terms of translations, from animal research to humans. What is the percentage of success rates? We just don't know. We never talk about that. So I think just giving the facts to the people and to the students, the ones who are, I think would be already a good thing, to, well, maybe just show that animal research is not so great. I mean, when I say that, I don't mean to, obviously, to argue with my other scientist colleagues, who always think that when we are criticizing animal research, we are criticizing their work or criticizing who they are. But that is absolutely not the point. The point is just to encourage, to maybe invite them to be open to something else, and specifically now that we are, in the 21st century, that there are alternatives that do exist, and that we should be able to embrace new technology and alternatives rather than being stuck in an old model that has been overused now, and that we have clearly reached the limits. And also, I think contacting the universities, because sometimes the universities are not, they are not up to date with what's going on. This is not on the top priority for them to introduce new technological device or alternatives for animal research. They have other thing in mind. So
So
can
really,
you hear me?
yes, I can hear you. Yes, so I
Okay.
guess the two central, I guess, pieces of advice for HRAs to kind of target students and
Yes.
put the information out there that there are limitations, so I guess they can be then informed about the issue and make their own decisions based on that information. And that was kind of the key point. And then your second
Exactly.
point, you might have to just reiterate that one.
And yes, contacting the universities
Oh yes, letting them know
or
about
yes,
yeah. We've
yes,
got a
yes.
lot of resources that we share with them, better ways to do research report, and I think it's a case of proactively getting that information out there to the animal ethics committees and the research departments. And quite often you've probably seen we'll compile case studies of research that's been conducted, and we'll suggest an alternative way it could have been put in place, or maybe suggest a company that might be able to provide those research tools. Sometimes we get a good response, sometimes not so good, sometimes no response, but occasionally we will get we might even get sometimes we'll look at research that's been conducted in the past and contact the university, and they say that they're no longer conducting that research. So
Oh,
sometimes there's
okay.
progress in the
Yeah.
time since it's been taken place and being published that they're no longer using it. So
Yeah,
that's a positive.
I think this is great here.
Okay, and the final question I've got for you today is, if you could achieve, I'm not single-minded expecting you to achieve this, but if one thing could be achieved for animals in laboratories, what do you think that thing should be?
Well, I guess you kind of know my answer. Well, it is obviously to make it illegal, to stop it completely. I think that would be the best things for all the animals all over the world. Yes,
So
as I say,
changing the law.
changing the law, yeah, and to completely phase out that type of research and really to focus on new technology, and yes, to focus on those new techniques rather than just being stuck with old good ways and old models, which are outdated.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your insights, and apologies, listeners, for a slight technical issue earlier. I hope you managed to
Okay.
catch everything about the PhD studies and Hugo's experience. Hugo, do you have anything else you want to share before we finish up today?
I've No, but because I was thinking about this podcast, I just thought that, I just thought about an old speech from Charlie Chaplin, who was saying that we would need to think a bit less and to feel a little bit more. I think that would be a good sentence to conclude the interview. So,
Thank you. And that's not the
yes.
kind of thing we expect from a scientist either. But really good, because I think it's both, and the same with HRA getting our message out as well. It's kind of getting the message out to people to think about things from their brain, but also to think about things emotively as well, and to
Yes.
think about how animals feel and how their own animals would feel, and think also, I guess, about the emotion of wanting to have the best health outcomes for longevity and health as well. It's not just the emotion related to animals. So it's really good to hear you say that. Thank
Thank you.
you. We really
No
appreciate
worries.
it. Thank you.